Welcome to the third day of our seminar on the learning from 24 gurus. Yesterday we heard from five gurus, the water, fire, moon, sun, and the pigeon. So did anybody apply what you learned yesterday as far as the in connection with the water guru? Did anyone try to apply that lesson yesterday? Yes, that today.
Because it's so cold, we have the hot water. It's so soothing and purifying and nurturing.
The hot water was soothing, purifying, and nurturing. So you noticed that. Yeah, you noticed that about the water yesterday. Good. Anybody else apply the lesson or remember about water yesterday? Yes, Champa Kalata.
I've had some wonderful heart connection talks with someone that I connected with here, and she commented yesterday that she felt that it was very transparent. That we were being very genuine with each other.
So you had some heartfelt talks, heart connection talks with somebody, and you felt that you were being transparent.
Okay.
And she was too. Both of you were transparent. Oh, very good. Yes, Lavangalata.
The kirtan last night was very sweet.
The kirtan last night was very sweet. So that was the sweet sound of the water, is kirtan. Yes, Kusha.
The one thing that I noticed that I never understood before, and this is just a real simple practical thing, is that women sing in a similar key, and you can actually hit the notes. In all these years, I thought I couldn't sing because I was trying to sing with the men, and I couldn't hit the notes.
Right. Yeah, so you realized that everyone could sing because you were all women. You could sing. You could actually sing with them.
Yeah.
I knew that as a musician. That it was. I already understood that fact long ago. Okay. Anything else on the water? No. But, yes. Water is necessary for drinking. So you drank a lot of water yesterday? Okay, yes.
If we do not drink water, we could die.
Yes, so without water we could die. So, yes. Okay, so the same. Without kirtan we will die. Without hearing about Krishna, we will also die. Okay, fire. And we had some lessons from fire. Purifying. Concealed and revealed. Yes, Tate?
I love sitting around a fire. When the men aren't out there by their little fire, I'll sit out there.
You like to sit by the men's fire over there when they're not there. Okay?
Also, the thing about fire is that so many people can sit around the fire and you're not taking from anyone else.
Right,
so
right.
So it's constantly giving. And it's
fire is constantly giving. Okay? Kusha.
Yesterday, I had promised my deity that I would always give him a hot bath.
Uh-huh.
So I carry around this little heating pot thing.
Right.
Well, after his bath later on, it wouldn't work. Oh. And I got really an anxiety that I wouldn't be able to fulfill my promise to the deity by having fire to heat his water.
Okay.
But then he was tricky and it was just a plug issue.
Right.
And maybe the electricity, the fire wasn't coming into that plug. Mm. But I could see the absence of fire created anxiety.
Absence of fire created anxiety because you wanted to serve your deity. Yeah, okay.
This morning it worked.
Oh. Yeah, it happens. Yeah, it might. Yeah, anyway, whatever it may be. Anything else on fire? Yes.
Well, with the big feast we had, I think I was praying for my fire digestion to go straight.
You were praying for your fire digestion to kick in after the big feast yesterday. Okay. Next is the moon. The moon. Did anybody apply the lesson waxing and waning of the moon yesterday? Okay. Yes. Mahalakshmi.
And
some difficulty in accepting what nice things that I am, might be saying by someone, or things that I would like to do. I don't know why I get like blocked. And then yesterday, a devotee says something nice to me. I said, actually, I'm thinking, who is that nice devotee who is doing things around? What's your name? And it was us saying, no. I said, okay, just move with the flow, don't go against.
Right.
And I said, well, actually, a devotee has such a nice eye that finds good qualities in anyone. You know? And in this way, we are being purified. You know? So I feel it's like an effect of moving. Instead of being identified with the body, being identified with the nice consciousness that the devotees have.
Okay, good. So you were feeling detached a little bit from the body by remembering the lesson. Yes, Kanchapakot.
I was really appreciating the film.
The
I was
film.
Really
oh,
the
yeah.
The film we watched yesterday, Women of Bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was obvious that people from various backgrounds were being interviewed, and I could always tell when someone was problematic with disability, not just because I know them, but because it really seemed that they are unaffected by whatever age they are. There's this youthful effulgence about all the Prabhupada's devotees, no matter whether there's wrinkles or no wrinkles. And it deeply touched me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the film last night.
Yeah, seeing the film, the difference between Prabhupada's people and other people.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, it was dramatic. And I really felt like Prabhupada's people are being affected by the changing of the body in the same way that...
Okay, so in the film you felt that the Prabhupada people, the disciples of Prabhupada, related to Prabhupada, were not being affected by the body. And the other ones hadn't got that to that stage yet.
No, they didn't have that same youthful glow.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know,
they look
the same to me.
They didn't look the same, okay. Yeah? Prabhupada has given something. Kusha?
Well, the waxing, waning, and nourishing, and also the never seeing void, a lot of the wonderful young devotees here were coming and asking for blessings, and I was understanding that Srila Prabhupada is the full moon of the blessings, and I'm like Amavasya. But somehow or other, to able to reflect Srila Prabhupada's blessings, I mean, I have no potency at all, and it was sort of embarrassing, you know, to be asked for blessings. But then the understanding of the full moon of Prabhupada's nourishing blessings that come through, and that even if I am a little Amavasya, just to remember Prabhupada is good.
Yeah, yes. Somehow we can just reflect whatever Prabhupada we've gotten, then that will be a blessing. Anybody else on the waxing waning moon? Mike?
Yesterday, Shri Priyamati was, you know, doing ecstatic kirtan. And after the kirtan, he went out and we were discussing that. He's such a rich old age. He's so enthusiastic. And even she can make everybody dance, it is because she's like more than elevated by her age. Your devotees are, you know, on the base, on the level of soul, and they can really leverage her enough, and they can make people leverage her.
Good, thank you.
If you can repeat, you don't.
Well, she was, the kirtan was Vishakha. Oh, yeah, Vishakha's kirtan last night was ecstatic, and she made everyone dance despite the age of the body. So, yeah, okay, so that was what her comment was. Yes, okay, so now the sun. Did anybody get a chance to apply the lesson of the sun yesterday? Mahalakshmi?
It's been this morning.
This morning, yeah, well, that counts.
So, I went outside to chant japa, and I was trying to apply what I heard the other day, but it was saying that Prabhupada told her that just chant and listen, no? but of course, because we're crossing them, there were persons doing parikrama, nice persons. And then there was a group with, I don't know, my mind made me think of it, which kind of parikrama is it, because they were like, I don't know, I didn't understand the word. Some thought crossed my mind. And then when I was coming back, I just said to them, because they were saying Hare Radha or something like that. And I told them, Hare Krishna, and they started saying, Hare Krishna. And I said, okay, let's go. And we chanted together, shouting Hare Krishna. I was thinking, yes, the sun does not discriminate, no? But they were chanting Hare Krishna in ecstasy, like with their arms. They didn't know the mantra, but they took it and they started chanting and chanting.
Okay. Anything else on the sun? And after the sun, yes, sun, yes, Champak Lata.
Well, I ended up telling another story about Srila Prabhupada and his giving.
Oh, yeah, his Prabhupada's giving, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you had already told some stories about
Yeah, Prabhupada's giving, you have another one.
Yeah, this is actually also a contributor to Prabhu that he observed that several devotees over the course of several days were giving Prabhupada watches.
Uh-huh.
And one of them gave Prabhupada this very expensive watch. It cost like $300 or something.
Right.
And Prabhupada very graciously accepted it, put it on his wrist, took off the old one, gave the old one to this devotee. And then the following day, or you know, some days later, someone gave Prabhupada maybe, you know, a $20 watch. And with the same graciousness, he accepted the $20 watch, took off the $300 watch,
right,
and gave that to the devotee.
So Prabhupada was showing us that lesson of accepting and giving without considering, like Bhagavad Gita says, the pebble, stone, and goat is all the same. He didn't see. He just saw the devotion of it. Okay, then the last one was the foolish pigeon. Did anyone get a chance to apply that lesson yesterday? Foolish pigeon. No? Okay, well, you still got time the rest of your life. No problem. Our gurus today are the python, the ocean, the moth, the honeybee, and the elephant. So the python just lays down and waits for food to come to it. And what lesson can we learn from this python is that to live simply. It's not that we don't do anything, but at least don't over-endeavor. No atyahara. Use your energy for self-realization or devotional service. Because happiness and distress will come of its own accord. You don't have to go after happiness, just like you don't have to go after distress. It will come automatically if you just live in this world. So the verse also says, accept food which comes of its own accord, whether such food is delicious or tasteless, ample or meager. Sometimes you get too much food, and sometimes you don't get enough. But accept, either way. And if it's accepted, whether it's delicious or tasteless. Of course, this is very easy for us for applying to prasadam, because sometimes it may happen that your prasadam is not to your taste as you would like to have it. And sometimes you're sick also and you can't have what you would normally eat. So this is the practice of the python. Not to be active for material gain, but rather alert to your spiritual interest, self-interest. So the practical experience of this is the devotees. They go out and preach, and sometimes they get very nice prasadam, and sometimes they get very simple prasadam. And sometimes they get very little, and sometimes they get too much. Usually, I can tell you, it's usually too much, actually. The little problem is not usually there, except when you're traveling long distance on the airplane, maybe. But the devotee automatically receives all facilities for his personal maintenance. If he surrenders to Krishna. I know at one point I had completely zero money, but then the next week I got, you know, so much that I didn't have that much in the last year, you know. So it was like, because I went to preach and I just depend on Krishna. And so this is the experience of the devotee. Indradyumna Swami tells a story how he was traveling with Srila Prabhupada to London, and when it came time to get off the airplane, and then they went through immigration, one of Srila Prabhupada's suitcases was lost, and so he had to stay back and for that suitcase, and everybody else went with Prabhupada to the temple. And so he waited. It took about an hour and a half before he got out of the airport, and he had to take a taxi. Nobody was there to take him back. Then he got to the temple, he was starving, and it was time for, and all the devotees were kind of laying around, holding their stomachs, like, we just had a huge feast, Prabhu. He said, is there anything left? Oh, no, sorry, we ate everything, you know. So then he had to carry this huge, heavy suitcase up the stairs, and he asked for help. They said, no, we just ate. We just can't help you, you know. So he got up to the top of the stairs, and he didn't even knock. He just opened the door, and Prabhupada was right there. And so he brought the suitcase in and dropped it and bowed, offered obeisances. And then when he was down, Prabhupada slapped him really hard in the back and said something. And then Prabhupada's servant, that was Nanda Kumar, I think, at the time, he had his mouth open. He said, did you hear what Prabhupada said? And he said, no. And he said, Prabhupada said that now in this world, it is very difficult. There will be so many difficulties. But when I take you back to Godhead, everything will be easy. Wow. So we tolerate and we accept whatever Krishna gives us for his service. So also we try to conserve our energy, especially now, the older you get, you realize you have a very limited amount of energy. So you can't really use it for, you know, making money or this and that. You have to just depend on Krishna. When Prabhupada first went to America, he was writing down, he was conserving his money very carefully, writing down every penny he spent. He would walk instead of take the bus. And when we were first in India, we couldn't take taxis at all. We were in these crazy buses, even on the roof of the buses. I preferred the roof because it was more breezy, and inside was quite hot and people crowding. But the roof, you know, not that many people up there. Just had to watch out for the electric lines and the trees. But the buses, and we were not to make phone calls. They were too expensive. We had to write letters. And, of course, from India, half of what you wrote would not get there, and half of what they wrote would not get to you. So we just had to, again, depend on Krishna. But the phone calls also were pretty bad. I mean, I remember trying, it took you at least 10 times to get the other side, tried dialing 10 times. The phones were pretty useless, too, in Calcutta. So Prabhupada was conserving money very much. In Vrindavan, there was one devotee, I won't mention his name, but he was, his duty was to go shopping for bhoga. And Prabhupada told him, you're just wasting so much money, you should buy quantities of things. And so then this devotee decided, yes, I will follow Prabhupada's instruction. He bought a whole bunch of bananas. So Prabhupada saw that, and, you know, of course they were rotten after a day or two. He said, you bought bananas because you're a monkey, that's why. But anyway, Prabhupada had that mood. And one of his godbrothers tells a story before, when Prabhupada was in Delhi distributing his back to Godheads and going door to door for donations. One very hot day, this brahmachari was on a bicycle passing Prabhupada, and he saw Prabhupada standing at the gate of one house, and he was waiting. And he said, what are you waiting for, Maharaj? And Prabhupada said, I'm waiting to get a 5-rupee donation here. So then after some hours, the brahmachari came back, and Prabhupada was still standing there. And he asked, do you have the 5 rupees? And Prabhupada said, no, the gentleman has not yet arrived, but I will wait. And then the brahmachari said, let's go now, I'll give you the 5 rupees. And Prabhupada said, well, can you give me every month 5 rupees? So he said, I agreed. And he said, is there anything else you need? Are you short of anything? He seemed so poor at the time, this brahmachari noticed. If you need anything, I'll get it for you. Please come with me. So he said his clothes were torn, so I got him new clothes and brought him to our mat. And I said, instead of 5 rupees, I will give you 10 rupees. So Prabhupada, he was very determined, very conserving. Every little rupee counted with him. He didn't want to waste money. And he certainly didn't waste it on himself, that's for sure. He didn't waste it on his clothes or whatever. He just used all the money for books. So the Python in Braj, there's a couple of Pythons. One is Agashura, and the other one is the one who swallowed Nanda Maharaj. But that's the only Pythons I know in Braj. But I do know that they do enhance Krishna's pastimes. The snakes, sometimes, they scare Radharani, and then Radharani goes to Krishna. Say, help, you know. So everything in Braj enhances Krishna's pastimes, even the pythons, even the snakes. So this lesson we have, the next guru, our next guru is the ocean. What are the qualities of the ocean? Who can tell me? Huge, unlimited. You can't see the end of it. What else?
Undisturbed.
Undisturbed. Malati?
Very deep.
Very deep. Yes. Yes.
Also very powerful.
Powerful. Very powerful. Yes.
Constantly moving.
Constantly moving, yes.
Cannot cross its limits.
Cannot cross its limits. Good. So two of these qualities we will pick up today as a lesson. One is gravity. It's very grave and undisturbed, like a sage. And the second quality is that the ocean is undisturbed in abundance and scarcity. So the first verse, a saintly sage, because of his knowledge, is never disturbed. He's like tranquil waters of the unfathomable and unsurpassable ocean. So, pure devotee, having taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, possesses great spiritual power. Therefore, he cannot be surpassed or overwhelmed. In fact, having developed his spiritual body, he's not affected by the deteriorating actions of time. So that's what Champak Lata noticed, that the devotees seem so youthful on that film as compared to the other people. So they're not affected by time. The ocean is grave and it stays within its limits. So this is like an introspective human being who uses his life for self-realization also. Now that's the first lesson, gravity, unsurpassable. And the second lesson is how it's undisturbed in abundance and scarcity. Here's the verse. During the rainy season, the swollen rivers rush into the ocean. And during the dry summer, the rivers, now shallow, severely reduce their supply of water. Yet the ocean does not swell up during the rainy season, nor does it dry up in the hot summer. So no matter how much water is pouring into the ocean, it doesn't overflow. And no matter how much less comes into it in the hot summer, it doesn't go down. Similarly, a saintly devotee who has accepted the Lord as the goal of his life sometimes will receive by providence great material opulence, and sometimes he'll find himself materially destitute. However, such a devotee of the Lord does not rejoice in a flourishing condition, nor is he morose when poverty stricken. So that's, we can see at the beginning of our movement, we had nothing, pretty much. We were just on the streets, or in India, we were, the ladies' ashram was the roof of the building in Bombay. And we came there in May. There we were. I was up there with Vishaka and Saradiya. Vishaka was writing an article for BTG, and Saradiya was painting pictures. And Mai Tahiri was having a hard time because she was very big and she didn't like the mosquito net and all that. But we were just up there with our whatever luggage we had and our bedrolls and up on the roof. Even in Mayapur for the festival in 75, some of the ladies were up on the roofs of the buildings. That was our room. The problem was that at night this huge storm came up and everything was blowing off the roof. Well, and then while we were in the middle of the night, we were asleep, and then all of a sudden we were caught in this huge storm and my japa beads blew off, my original ones. And I was really worried, and I came down, and then we all came and we were sleeping anywhere on the stairs in the hall in the middle of the night. And then at 4 in the morning I woke up. I didn't even notice I lost my beads. But then someone had my beads. And they said, do you know who these belong to? I said, yeah, they're my beads. So anyway, Krishna particularly beads. But yeah, we used to have, we were poverty stricken actually. The building was built, but still we couldn't stay in the building, you know. First we were in the building, but it was being built. And then the building was built, but we were on the roof. Not of that building, we were on the roof of this other one, which is now near Prabhupada Samadhi. It used to be a kitchen where the brahmacharis stay now. We were up on that building's roof. Because there was just a long, no, not that big building, but on the wall, those buildings, and then that one was the women's ashram. Anyway, it was quite difficult, but we were young and everything was an adventure, and so it wasn't so bad. And then after, all the opulence came, and now I think, you know, how did I ever do it? You know, I couldn't do it now. But so about the ocean, there's a beautiful analogy in Bhagavatam, in one purport, 4:22:39. That the rivers are flowing into the ocean. The river, the flowing river, is compared to sense desires. So many desires are flowing, but they go into the river. And when the tide comes in, then the river surpasses, it comes over the river and overwhelms the flowing of the river. And that's compared to the ocean. The ocean is compared to devotional service. And when the tide comes up, then it overflows all your stagnant desires for sense gratification. And I had that experience in Goa, when I used to live in Goa. In monsoon, you can't swim in the ocean. So we were swimming in the river, and it was sweet water. And then, but when the tide came in, then it flew. It came into the river, and the water became salty, and it started flowing upstream. So it's quite nice that, you know, your material desires, instead of, you know, becoming, catching you and dragging you down, they become spiritual and take you to Krishna. If you dive into the ocean of devotion. So this is a really nice analogy from Srimad Bhagavatam. A saintly person has mastered the art of remaining equipoised in happiness and distress. But unless one practices throughout his life, these qualities will not develop. So from the ocean we learn to be grave, we learn to be undisturbed, and gravity is explained in Nectar of Devotion. A person who does not express his mind to everyone, or whose mental activity and plan of action are difficult to understand, is called grave. So Srila Prabhupada exemplified this quality of gravity. He said, grave means don't talk nonsense. Don't waste time. If you've got time, chant Hare Krishna. But don't talk nonsense. So here are some very grave facts. Tripurari asked Prabhupada, is it true the spiritual master will come back if the disciple falls down? Prabhupada said, yes, but don't take advantage. Gururaj said, sometimes I feel concerned for the miserable conditions of the people. Sometimes I feel sadness when I wish for people to be delivered. And Prabhupada said gravely, why sometimes? Just follow my instructions. So that means that we will develop that compassion if we follow Prabhupada's instructions. One time Prabhupada was photographed. One of his first photographs taken of Prabhupada, he looked very grave. And the devotee said that, you look almost sad there. Prabhupada said, this was a moment of ecstasy. That we cannot understand the pure devotee. And then another time in 75 in Dallas, Prabhupada was invited on the traveling bus around a Damodar. They offered him a huge plate of prasadam, and he just took a single slice of papaya and said, a yogi requires very little food to maintain his body. And then he took the rest of the fruit dish, offered it to a small baby boy, about 1 or 2 years old. And the boy leaned from his mother's arms to snatch a big red strawberry. And Prabhupada said, children like red. And then after that, the child's father left Krishna consciousness and was encountering all sorts of personal problems. So when the wife came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada spoke to her, the words seemed to come from the core of his heart. This is written by Gopalacharya Das. Tell him to come back. He's a very intelligent boy. He glanced at the child and said, now, you become a pure devotee and rescue your father. Tears welled up in Prabhupada's eyes. His gravity affected the whole atmosphere. Prabhupada said, it's like when I cut my finger, the pain is felt in the mind as well. Similarly, when my disciple has difficulty, I feel the pain also. Prabhupada must have felt a lot of pain because a lot of us were in difficulty. And even when Prabhupada was here, we were having a lot of problems. So the ocean, there's no ocean in Braj, but there is an ocean in Dwarka. And so the queens were talking about that ocean at the end of Krishna book, chapter 90. And the queens, there was next to Krishna at night, and they're addressing the ocean. You're always roaring, not sleeping at night. Are you suffering insomnia? Or is it that, as with us, Mukunda has taken your insignias and you're hopeless of retrieving them? So the insignias of the ocean are the Kaustubha gem and Lakshmi Devi. And these were taken by Lord Vishnu and put on his chest. So the queens presume the ocean is anxious to see again the chest of the Lord, to see where his insignias have gone, to see where Lakshmi and Kaustubha gem have gone. And there's one more beautiful thing in Krishna book. It's in the original Krishna book. I don't see it now. But I always remembered this quote from Krishna book. And it's at the end of the Krishna book, when Krishna and Arjuna are going to the Brahmajyoti, past the Brahman to see Mahavishnu. And it says that, it describes the Karana ocean. And there was a sentence, there was a strong hurricane of transcendental effulgence brewing. Just imagine that statement. A strong hurricane of a transcendental effulgence. So a hurricane of effulgence, whatever that may be. I thought, that really struck me from the beginning when I first read it. But then I don't see it now in folio, but it was there in the original, because I have the original. And the water of the Karana ocean was greatly agitated. So this was the ocean. Our next guru, we learn from the ocean again, gravity and to be undisturbed. Now the moth. You know, everybody knows what is a moth. It's like a butterfly, but very small and has no color. And the moth likes to fly into the fire, especially in India, because sometimes the lights go out and we have to use candlelight. And we see this. We see not only the moths, so many small bugs just dive into the fire and finish. So the lesson you have to learn from here is to beware the sense of sight. Where do your eyes go? That you have to be careful. Where your eyes go. Your eyes can kill you. Actually, there's five senses now, and five different gurus will illustrate the five different senses and their dangers. The moth is killed by his sight. He's captivated by the light. And then he goes to the light and he dies. The elephant is trapped by its desire to touch the female elephant. So the sense of touch, illustrated by the elephant. The bee is killed by its attraction to the smell of the flowers. It goes inside a lotus flower, and the lotus flower closes up at night, and the bee is finished. If it lingers there. If it lingers in the flower, then it's finished. Then there's the deer. The deer is captivated by sound. The sound of the hunter has some kind of a flute or something to call the deer. And then the fish is captivated by the sense of taste. So all of our senses, I mean, these animals only have one problem. One sense gets them, but we have all five. So we have to be very careful of all five senses. Make sure that they are looking at Krishna, smelling the flower offered to Krishna, and doing everything in relation, tasting Krishna prasadam, hearing Krishna kirtan. So the moth, how to counteract this, how to counteract these desires to enjoy through the different senses. Srila Prabhupada wrote one letter to one devotee, Satyabhama. This was a lady, and she asked, how do I overcome lust? And Prabhupada gave this answer. Our thoughts are always changing. That is the nature of the mind, so you cannot expect even the great saintly persons are free from thoughts coming and going. But after thinking, there is feeling and willing. Willing being the stage of putting the thoughts into action. So if we are able to employ our intelligence, then we kill the thoughts before they become manifest in activity. But because we're so inclined to enjoy something unintelligently, therefore we have to daily sharpen our intelligence by reading, discussing, and preaching to others. So this hearing, this discussion, this will sharpen your intelligence, and you'll be able to use your intelligence to save yourself from being a victim of your senses. Then Prabhupada said, in this way we are able very easily to defeat all challenges to our philosophy, and everything becomes clear as it is revealed from different angles of vision. So in India, of course, Prabhupada saw so many examples of the moth going into the fire, especially if you ever lived in Mayapur. You will see in the monsoon time that millions of bugs are there going to the lights. And then at night, they all pile up on the floor. When I used to live in Mayapur, it's like you have a floor full of bugs of assorted varieties, big, small, unknown species that you've never seen before. And but they finish. And they're all attracted to the light. And Srila Prabhupada said that in the same way, people, they're attracted to these big, big skyscraper buildings, but they don't know what will happen at death. So Prabhupada said that in nighttime, these bugs, they have their whole life, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all just in one night. And in the morning, they're finished. So we have our little bug-like life also, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and then at the end, it's finished. If you do not serve Krishna, then it's all, like that film, morning film said, it's, what is the use? As Srila Prabhupada said, nationalism, socialism, communism, just they're just like the incense going to the fire. People go into these things. And he said he had personal experience in 1947 when they divided India into Pakistan and India. Then so many people died. The Hindus and Muslims were fighting in the streets of Calcutta. And then in the morning time, there were heaps of dead bodies. And Prabhupada said, then you see that you couldn't tell the difference between the Hindus and the Muslims. They were all together. And the garbage people took them all and threw them away together. And so this is the lesson of the moth, that don't be too attached to these materialistic ideas, to the fire. Actually, in Bhagavatam, second canto, it says this material world is a dazzling display. And we are attracted to this dazzling display. Our sight, our mind. Bhavananda Prabhu asked Prabhupada, said to Prabhupada, I'm so lusty, my eyes go everywhere. Prabhupada said, oh, that means you are going to go blind. Bhavananda said, blind to material nature? I hope, sure, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, blind. So if your eyes go everywhere, watch out. You might become blind. That was what Prabhupada said. Now, Prabhupada exemplified the quality of, the opposite quality of not being attracted by his sense of sight. Gurudas tells, so once a taxi driver asked Prabhupada, do you sleep on a bed of nails? Because you're a swami. Prabhupada said, it's not a great thing to overcome pain. Pain can be overcome by drugs. But a real swami is one who is self-controlled, just like one who can sit in a room of beautiful women and not be agitated. So that was Prabhupada's special quality. So this is, and if you watch the following, the series of, Yadubara, then in San Francisco in the early days, that film is amazing. You just see all these young ladies dancing with Srila Prabhupada, and he's just completely undisturbed. He's there smiling and very magnanimous and wonderful. So here's one more example from Shukirti, Zurich, Switzerland. They went to a luxury train for St. Moritz. You know the story. So So the train ride was magnificent. He said, we're following the contour of the mountains, snow-covered, and the train was circling in different directions. The awe-inspiring scenery had the full attention of Jai, Hari, and myself. Prabhupada quietly chanted as we pointed out the different scenic views to each other, completely oblivious to our spiritual guide sitting beside us. What do they call this place? Srila Prabhupada asked calmly, breaking our meditation. St. Moritz, Srila Prabhupada, St. Moritz, I quickly said, feeling delighted with the opportunity to answer such a simple question. They may call it St. Moritz, Prabhupada responded. I call it St. Hellish. This place is hellish. Look out there. There is no life anywhere, simply branches of tree and snow. There is not a living thing for miles. Srila Prabhupada had effectively turned our illusion into an opportunity to instruct two of his fledgling disciples. Jai Hari and I spent the rest of the journey with our heads down, quietly chanting and hearing the transcendental sound vibration of the Maha Mantra, just as Srila Prabhupada desired. Being with Prabhupada was the most fortunate position, so this was the problem of sight. They were captivated by the snow, covered mountains, and Prabhupada just completely broke that illusion. So, the honey, okay, so that's the moth. Our next guru is the honeybee, and we're going to learn one very important lesson from the honeybee, and that is Madhukari. Madhukari means that you go door to door and beg for just very, you know, go different houses and beg for your food. In Vrindavan, in Braj, they do this. Now the honeybee, but what the lesson is that the honeybee takes nectar from all flowers. So in the same way the honeybee takes nectar from all flowers, we should take the essence of all scriptures. So the principles are more important than the details. The principles of the scriptures. And of course the lesson of smell is there with the bee, which I already discussed. So Madhukari means you accept enough food again to keep body and soul together. This is like the python, very similar. Don't store your food if you're a saint, if you're a sadhu. Of course, if you're a grihastha, then it's a little different. But for a devotee, we should follow the example of the bee. And so one lesson is that we don't be so concerned. Don't do atyahara. Don't do atyahara. And the second lesson is we should be non-sectarian in our approach to spiritual life. The Sarvagrahi Vaishnava looks for the essence of religion. He's universal in his thinking. So Satyavrat, one of my godbrothers, wrote a book on Uddhava Gita, and he said religion is like a human being. The body of religion refers to its external principles, its customs, its rituals. People who emphasize this aspect think in terms of us and them, and are the cause of religious fights. The soul of religion is embraced by the mystics, the saints, who see harmony in all spiritual truth. And that I remember when I was a Christian, and I really accepted the words of Christ, and I remember, but when I was 13 years old, I could see the difference between the ritual and the essence, because I went to my church, and I was looking at the people, and I just said, these people are coming here to show their clothes, to socialize, to do so many things. They don't believe it. I believe it, but they don't believe it. I really believe it, but I don't think these people really believe it, what Christ said. And then it was so easy to become a devotee because, you know, the basic rule was to love God, first rule of Christ. And so that's what Krishna consciousness is all about, how to love God, how to perform bhakti yoga. So I didn't see any contradiction, but I found a lot more to learn in Krishna consciousness, in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So wonderful. So how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? So Prithu, my godbrother, he was on Hippie Hill in San Francisco after Prabhupada left. And he was just chanting there, chanting his rounds on the hill. And one old man came by, and he said to Prithu, you know, that old man who started this thing, he was a cool cat. I was living in the Bowery. And he was living in the Bowery too. So that's a place where all the drunkards and poor people, you know, really down people. But then again, Jesus was born in a barn. And then he walked away. And so this one of the bums appreciated Prabhupada. The bums on the Bowery actually appreciated Prabhupada a lot. Then in Iran, a Muslim country, Manjari tells a story that three times a day over loudspeakers they would have this namaz, the Muslim prayers. And Prabhupada was listening and he turned to Atreya Rishi. He said, "This is very nice. What is this?" And Atreya said, "Oh, this is the Muslim call to prayer. They're saying the names of God." Prabhupada said, "Oh, that's very good. They're calling everyone to prayer." And Atreya said, "But Prabhupada, isn't it better to say the name of Krishna rather than Allah?" Prabhupada said, "You're asking me to be sectarian?" So Prabhupada did not see. He was non-sectarian. He appreciated that. And after that, Atreya Rishi started Harinam in Iran using all the names of the Muslim names. And they were singing it to me one day in Prabhupada in Vrindavan. They did the whole mantra. They did a Maha mantra with the names of Allah. And they said they were chanting in the streets and thousands of people were following them in Iran before the revolution and everything that was before. And so it's powerful. So Madhukari, now we'll talk about Madhukari. Prabhupada, before he left for the West, he used to do Madhukari in Vrindavan. And he would go door to door saying, "Jai Radhe, Radha Madhava, Jai Gorhari." This one man tells a story, and Sabrij Basis will give him 1 rupee, chapatis, some sabji. Then another one, the milkman, tells a story about Prabhupada doing Madhukari. This person, Kishanlal Sharma Pandit, he said, "My father used to give milk to Srila Prabhupada when he lived at the Radha Damodar temple. Prabhupada would come daily to our shop with his tiffin, and my father would give him cow's milk for his offering as Madhukari. Sometimes if my father noticed Prabhupada had not come for several days to collect milk, he would send me there to deliver it." So this is one boy. "One time when I came to deliver the milk, I arrived at his doorway and stood there with a container. But he was chanting Harinam very deeply and didn't hear me. So I was waiting there for some time because I didn't want to interrupt his devotion. I kept peeking inside his door and I noticed there were many tears in his eyes. As I watched, I noticed on the dirt floor there were some bugs. Then I saw a scorpion crawling very close to his feet. And he didn't notice. So I started making little noises to catch his attention, but he was still chanting and not aware of outside things. Finally, I called him, 'Oh, Prabhu, there's a scorpion near you.' He slowly opened his eyes, which were wet with tears. When he looked at me, his glance was so deep with feeling and mercy. He just looked at me, then down at the scorpion. I asked him if I could sweep it from his room. In a gentle, grave voice, he answered, 'No, no, please, don't worry about it. Don't disturb. He is also a devotee.'" So then, after some years, I saw him again, and when he came back to Vrindavan with his disciples, Prabhupada looked over and saw me. He called out to me and motioned for me to come nearby. I ran to his feet and touched them in the dust. Prabhupada then embraced me with love. Rubbing my head, he said to his students, "Oh, this is my boy, my old friend. He brought me milk, helped me before when I had nothing." Then Prabhupada took off a necklace of some valuable stones he had on his neck, broke it, and put the stones in my hand. And he said, "We've kept that gift and made those stones into earrings that my wife wears every day." So that was Prabhupada. He didn't forget that little milkman, the little milk boy. And he did Madhukari, actually. And he actually followed this when he was living in Vrindavan. Now, I'd just like to say a few things. We heard something about the bees in Braj yesterday from Devi Shakti. Does anybody remember what we heard? Lavangala?
Yeah, we were hearing that the bees fly around Krishna's garland.
They fly around Krishna's garland.
But the small bees sit on
Yeah, that. Oh, yeah. That's. I said that.
Oh, said
that. Yeah, that was. Yes.
She said that the leaves, the bees, fall
follow their leaders. There's one leader.
Oh, yeah, the bees follow the leader, and they go like that. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Parvati.
Radhika was telling us.
Radhika.
Yeah, Radhika was giving us a reading of the Gopal temple. And she was explaining that the kunjas are guarded by the bees.
Kunjas are guarded by the bees.
So that no one can enter.
Okay. So in Vaikuntha, when the bees start singing, all the other birds stop because they want to hear what the bees are saying, their glorification. And again, yeah, the flower garland, as someone mentioned, in Vaikuntha, they sit on the garlands. And now, Krishna glorifies the bees in the Dhenukasura Leela, actually. He said to Balaram, "Oh, original personality, these bees must all be great sages and elevated devotees of yours, for they're worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories. Though you've disguised yourself in this forest, they refuse to abandon you." So the bees used to follow behind Krishna, Balaram, and chant their glories. There's actually many wonderful references in Krishna book. And so then Balaram, in the purport it says, Balaram was not disturbed by the bees who were constantly following, the Lord blessed him, saying, "O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance." And then again, in that chapter, sometimes the bees would sing, they would be mad with ecstasy, close their eyes, and then Krishna would respond to their singing, and he would imitate them, and he would play his flute. So it is explained, the bees would drink the sap of the forest flowers, and the combination of this nectar and association of Krishna made them mad with intoxication. They closed their eyes in ecstasy and started humming, and Krishna imitated their humming. So then again, when Krishna left the gopis in Rasa dance, the gopis said that, "Oh," they were talking to Tulsi, "have you seen Krishna walk by wearing you and encircled by swarms of bees?" So the bees were there. Even the other gopis couldn't go. The bees went. When Radharani left and Krishna left the Rasa dance, the bees were there behind them. They were following them. And then even further it says that the gopis, they imagined Krishna must have been carrying a blue lotus in his right hand to drive away the bees, eagerly trying to smell the fragrance of Radharani's mouth. So the maddened bees had left the Tulsi garden to follow the two lovers. And it says even in the Rasa dance there's a verse, "The gopis danced with the Supreme Lord as swarms of bees sang in accompaniment." They were there at the Rasa dance singing. The bees were part of the chorus, singing, accompanying. And then even when Krishna went to the Jamuna, here it says, Krishna entered the water, followed swiftly by bees who were singing like the best of the Gandharvas. Those bees are everywhere. They even followed them into the Jamuna, singing the glories of Krishna. And then after he came out, he was strolling on the banks, and it says that followed by his entourage of bees and beautiful women, Lord Krishna looked like an intoxicated elephant. So the bees are his entourage. They were following, they followed through the whole Rasa dance. They were there. You never noticed that before, but they were there, the bees. Then here it says in the 35th, again, the gopis mentioned the bees, that maddened by the divine honey-like aroma of the Tulsi flowers and the garland Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him, and that most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledges and acclaims their song by taking his flute to his lips and singing. So then, in Dwaraka, in Krishna's bedroom, there's also bees. Here it's described in the 60th chapter when Krishna and Rukmini are talking. It says, Queen Rukmini's quarters were extremely beautiful, boasting a canopy hung with strings of pearls, effulgent jewels, garlands of jasmine and other flowers hung here and there, attracting swarms of humming bees. So imagine, they're even in Rukmini's bedroom. I mean, if we have one bee in our room, we're upset. But there's swarms here in Rukmini's palace, swarms of bees. They're very auspicious. So they're part of the chorus in the Ras Leela. They sing, they chant, they glorify Krishna, actually, these bees. They're wonderful. Then again, they wake up Krishna in the morning. Here, chapter 70, Krishna book. The bees buzzing, caused by the fragrant breeze from Parijata garden, roused the birds from sleep. And when the birds began to sing loudly, they woke Lord Krishna. So the bees are the first ones to wake up everybody. So they're quite... And I told that story in Calcutta, which you repeated, about the bees in Calcutta and with the deities. So our last... So we learn from the bees, Madhukari, don't over-endeavor, and also to take the essence, how it takes nectar from each flower. Take the essence of the scriptures, the essence of the religions. And our last guru is the elephant, and Madan by touch. Yes, Prashanta?
I have a nice verse from
Rupa Goswami about the bee, right? Of course, then there's the bee with Radharani too, Song of the Bumblebee. Okay, would you like to sing that verse for us? Okay, fine. We're going to hear a verse about some bees.
You have to hear the sound of the bee, ding, 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 ding. It's an automatic thing.
For that. And when you were speaking about this, the fragrance of Krishna's body, that reminded me of something about the earth. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Punyo Gandha Prithivyam Cha, I am the fragrance of the earth. How is Krishna the fragrance of the earth? So actually, I found out how. I was reading one commentary of one acharya that when Krishna takes his bath first thing in the morning, then his clothes drop to the earth, and the fragrance of his clothes gives the fragrance to the earth. And that's what we smell. when it's rain, you can smell the earth. When it's wet, and yeah.
I also had about this fragrance of the earth when I was teaching the Bhagavad Gita. I was really meditating very hard to understand how Krishna is the fragrance of the earth and things in the water. And then I realized I went to this
Madhurya Kadamani.
And in the
other
taste, yeah. that the first is the form. The devotee sees the transcendental form, and that form is so beautiful, that it's the origin of all beauty, that the devotee faints, and then Krishna comes close to him, and the devotee smells the fragrance of Krishna, and he awakens from slumber, and all his senses want to become the nose in order to smell this original fragrance, the totality of amazing fragrance, and he faints because it's too intense. And then Krishna starts speaking. Then Krishna speaks to wake him up. Says, "Oh, my devotee." And when the devotee hears his voice, the origin of sound, you know, again, he experiences so much ecstasy. All his senses want to be the spirit. And then faints again, especially that Krishna then is happy. Oh, my devotee, do not be afraid. For so many lifetimes, you have given us all relationships. You have given up your family. You have given up your comfort. You have given up everything to attain me. Today is your reward. Do not be afraid. And then, and it is the touch, the sense of touch. The devotee faints after hearing this fantastic word from Krishna, spoken with so much love. And then the Krishna awakens the devotee by touching. And Krishna's softness was the origin of all touch. So, and then he describes that. He awakens, he touches the devotee according to the rasa. If the devotee is in dasya bhava, Krishna puts his foot on his head. And the devotee feels the softness of Krishna's foot, the awakening. And if the devotee is in sakya rasa, Krishna touches him on the shoulder, starts slapping him on the shoulder, and he awakens. And if the devotee is in vatsalya rasa, Krishna comes and with his hand he wipes the tears. And if the devotee is in Madhurya Raja, Krishna comes, and with his very long arms, he embraces him. So in that way, in the body of Krishna, the original taste, the original sound, the original beauty, all the origin of the elements that are called to speak.
Okay, so our next guru is the, our last guru, is the elephant. And he's captured by touch. That they take a female elephant and put her down in a hole, and they cover the hole. But actually, no, he can see the she elephant, but he can't see that the path in front is, he's going to fall in there. So going after the she elephant, he falls into the hole, and he's captured, and he cannot move. So even though he's such a big, powerful animal, he's captured by the sense of touch. So Prabhupada, of course, was completely renounced. And Shutakirti talks about Prabhupada's renunciation. And this is a summary of a lot of what we've heard today. Prabhupada's mood of renunciation and austerity were evidenced by his acceptance of whatever Krishna did or did not provide. Whether his divine grace had a servant or not, it did not matter. He never asked anything for himself. Prabhupada once said, "An attached person pretends to be detached, but a detached individual acts in a considerate, loving manner." I saw Prabhupada demonstrate this in his daily life. Prabhupada treated us all so lovingly, although he was completely detached. So one last thing about Prabhupada. Gurdas tells, once, Prabhupada, you looked over during a kirtan, and saw two young girl disciples dancing and swaying together, and you directed me, go and photograph them. Hmm. So he saw the beauty. He didn't. He saw the beauty for Krishna.
We should give that to the manager.
Yes. So we have five lessons today, or more than five, from five gurus. That is the Python, again, to accept what comes of its own accord. Don't over-endeavor. The ocean. What did we learn from the ocean?
Undisturbed.
Grave. In abundance and scarcity. The moth. Beware of the sense of sight. The honeybee. Sense of smell. And Madhukari. Take the essence of all scriptures. And the elephant is the lesson of touch. So how could we apply the lesson of the python today to accept what comes of its own accord? How can we apply that to our lives?
Give all respect to prasadam, whatever comes.
Okay, give all respect to prasadam, whatever comes, respect. Okay, so with prasadam we can do that. And the honeybee, that's the moss. No, that's python. The ocean. How can we practice that in our lives today? Yes, Prashant?
Become more sober.
Become more sober, okay? That's
right. Be undisturbed by what comes your way.
Be undisturbed by what comes your way. Okay, then the moth. How can we practice that? Of course, here in Govardhan, it's not so hard.
Can look, there's so many deities.
Look at the deities, look at Giriraj, he's very big.
Pictures,
the devotees. Yes.
Seeing Krishna in everyone's heart.
Seeing Krishna in everyone's heart, oh, that's nice. That's a further expansion. Honeybee, you don't have to do Madhukari, actually. Sometimes I do it, yeah.
Avoid
Atyahara, okay? Yeah, too much accumulation. Tomorrow's bee will be more like on that line. Over Atyahara, yes, Atyahara. And how else can we practice, yes?
To take back home the essence of the entire retreat.
How you go?
Thinking about the discomforts, whatever little
right.
Or disagreements or whatever.
Jai, that is so good.
Can you repeat?
Take back the essence of this retreat without remembering or thinking of the discomforts or the disagreements or whatever may have happened while you were here. Yes, like this morning, when I woke up, the hot water was finished, and so it was not cold, but it was not to my satisfaction. Anyway, it's one of these little things. These little things. In fact, the windows don't open in my room. That's another one. But, you know, we don't remember that. We remember all the good times. Yes?
Richard? I was going to say basically the same thing. Maybe concentrate on principles.
Concentrate on principles rather than details. Right. Very good. And she got the essence. It's nice. The good things. Okay, anybody else on that? Then the last one is the elephant sense of touch. That would be hard. A hard one, I guess. I don't know. Gorangi.
Get your sense of touch by hugging the devotees.
Okay, hug the devotees today. You practice that lesson of sense of touch. Okay, now does anybody have any last question? We have a few minutes left. Yes.
We are always talking about over-endeavoring and how we should avoid over-endeavoring.
Okay.
But there is always, personally I always experience this. Always so difficult to make out when do I transgress that line.
Okay.
And the mind is so strong that I'm unable to control it, and it is always justifying the effort, always making me do more and more. And I don't even realize that I'm going away from what is my actual goal.
How do we know when we're over-endeavoring, when we're going over the line, actually? That's a very good question. Would anybody like to say something about that? How do we know when we're over-endeavoring?
When we forget Krishna.
When you forget Krishna. Okay, yes?
When you don't have time to read and chant properly.
When you don't have time to read and chant properly, then you're over-endeavoring.
Distaste for the holy thing.
Then?
Distaste for the holy thing.
Distaste for reading. for the holy name, lose taste for the holy name, poverty. Okay, that's good. When you think it's... Yeah, I have that problem because sometimes I over-endeavor in my devotional service a lot. I think I feel like sometimes it's too much, I have too much burden. And then what actually... When I come to the realization, well, you know, what are you doing in this? And what is Krishna doing in this? You know, and then it helps a lot when you realize it's not up to me. I mean, it's up to me to some extent, but not to the extent that I'm thinking it's up to me and then it's a burden. It shouldn't be like that. So actually it's more of a state of an attitude that you have to change. It may not be your external so much, but it's an attitudinal change I found in my life, because I do basically just a lot of devotional service. So I mean, if it's something else over endeavoring that's not devotional service, then it's a little easier. But suppose you're over-endeavoring in your devotional service, then how do you know? I know when my body says no, and my mind says no, then I think, okay. Then I take a day off and chant 32 rounds, 64 rounds, when I'm feeling like I'm over-endeavoring. And I just take a day off. Okay, now we're just going to chant. We're going to be with Krishna. He's the one who's doing everything. If there's any block, it's because I'm not Krishna conscious enough. So then I just chant. Yes, Parvati.
It shouldn't kill your determination.
Shouldn't kill your determination. Yes, take advice from Parvati. She's one of the most determined people I know. So if you feel like your determination, you're losing your determination to do something, or you're doubting that, you know, maybe I should, you know, the service is not what I'm supposed to be doing, then that may, you might be over-endeavoring.
If you're doing the service for the wrong reason, like pratishta.
You're doing the service for the wrong reason, like pratishta. Yes, pratishta means honor, fame. If you're doing it for that reason instead of for making Krishna happy. Yes, very good. Yes?
I don't know how to put it, but it is just not. Because by an example,
can you speak slowly? I don't understand what you're saying.
Python.
Okay. So what did you say?
So how are we going to do this today?
Yes.
We'll
accept the prasadam. Yeah.
I don't know how to put this, but is it just accepting? Are we eligible to accept prasadam's mercy of Krishna?
Yes.
So. If they're accepting, that means we have something like rejection also.
Yeah, some people reject prasadam. Yes.
So prasad is mercy. So what authority we have to accept from it? It is a mercy
short. Yeah, no. I mean, it's Prabhupada gives the example. So the question is, what authority do we have to accept or reject? We do have our free will. We have our free will. Prabhupada gives the example. The sun is shining on everyone, but if you lock yourself in the closet and with no windows, you won't get the benefit of the sun. So the mercy is equally distributed. But you do have that power to reject it or accept it. You do have. That power is there. Yeah, Parvati.
There's also an expression in our country. If life hands you a lemon and you let lemonade.
If life hands you a lemon, make lemonade with it. Because lemon means, it's like a bad term. Lemon means sour, a sour life, you know, something sour happens in your life. And so just make lemonade with it and then you can use it. So when difficult things happen, then you use it for Krishna. You somehow connect it to Krishna. Yes.
Or pickle.
Or pickle. Okay, pickle. If you're in a pickle in America. That's it.
When we try that over-endeavoring, we have to...
She's over-endeavoring with the mic, huh? Go ahead.
We have to remember man closes the lodge. So when we're constantly fighting the river, that's a way of
saying
to Krishna, okay, I'm trying to work this out. It's not working.
Yes. If something is repeatedly not working, and you just feel like you're banging your head against the wall.
And then when you give it up, something else, another door opens.
Yes. Then just leave it, okay. give, and you depend on Krishna's surrender. I have no power to do this. It's only up to you. And show me where the door is open.
Because it's over-endeavoring.
It's over-endeavoring. So you know it if you keep banging your head against the wall and nothing happens. Yes?
You spoke about ocean.
Ocean.
Rain and not affected by the monsoon.
Right.
Then how do we understand the tsunami?
How do we understand tsunami? Yes. So if the ocean is always grave and unaffected, and how come these big waves come all of a sudden? Yes, this is the work of the demons.
But the oceans are unaffected by the rivers.
Yeah,
the rain does not come from the
Yeah, this is, yeah, okay, her point is that this is not from the rivers coming into the ocean. An earthquake happens. The tsunami is created by earthquake. And the earthquake, these things are actually, yes, I've heard that a lot of the things that the scientists are doing today are causing the earthquakes, which cause the tsunamis. I've even heard more far-fetched things, that they can even cause tsunamis and cause earthquakes. They've come to that point where they can cause these things themselves, even directly. But when they go for the underground gas and the petroleum, then this causes these unnatural occurrences. So a tsunami is not a natural thing, it's an unnatural thing, and this is caused by demonic influence in this age of Kali. But actually, they are responsible for this. The ocean is following its natural, normal course, but if the demons do something that is so destructive, then everything, it will be influenced. It will be influenced. The irregular weather, everything. Melting of the ice caps, yes?
Tsunamis, I'm from Hawaii, so we experienced tsunamis.
All right, go.
My grandfather lost his house to a tsunami, and so this is like in the 40s before they were doing this. So, from another perspective, it's if you think about the Leela, a lot of times it's due to eclipses, due to Brahma and Ketu, and their effect on the sun and the moon, and the moon's tides, and then the earth responding. So there's some Leela before the demons did fracking and some of these other.
Before things. The fracking, okay.
Before the fracking.
Okay. So what was the cause at that point? That was the cause was the eclipses and
A lot of times in mundane astrology they'll look to see during the eclipse path, like when we had Samoa and we had India with the Orissan tsunami that happened there. The eclipse had happened right before that. Mm-hmm. So this is the Rahu Ketu issue.
Okay.
Which is also demons.
It's also demons.
On another level.
Yeah. On a higher level.
Yeah.
On a higher level of demons. Okay, Champakalata. And I think then after that we're finished.
On the same topic of the ocean, there was actually a Prabhupada story that I heard that I found to be really inspirational. The devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, he said if the pure devotee is great like the ocean, then why do we see that the pure devotee exhibits emotion, sometimes anger? And Prabhupada said, the ocean may appear to be, the waves may be churning, may be more violent. Obviously, we know about the Delaware tyranny. The Atlantic Ocean is usually very violent, and it wasn't. Which will probably cross. He said, but all you have to do is go below the surface.
Right.
And you see that the ocean is very calm below the surface. He said, in the same way, if you're going to appear to be angry, but actually, he's always peaceful. Below the surface.
Good. So the pure devotee may appear to be angry, but he's peaceful below the surface. Jai. Thank you. Hare Krishna, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.
Jai.